discharge pursuant to 11 U.S.C. 727A3.
Is the issue exactly whether he maintained the records, or whether in the sense of putting things down, or kept them in the more usual sense of the word, i.e., there were these settlement documents, but he apparently didn't keep them, or at least he didn't produce them. And that seems to be the core of the issue. And this is another case where the briefs are like passing in the dark, because you never mention these settlement documents, and the district court, the bankruptcy court, put all the emphasis on them, as does your opponent. So we're kind of not talking to each other very much.
Well, and I'll tell you that the settlement sheets, if they were in the record, I would have cited to them the testimony. Well, and the issue that I guess the appellant has is, where is the site in the record that shows that these that Wells Wyatt put so much emphasis on these settlement statements? I think that that's one of the errors in this record, is to say, well, your own client, Wells Wyatt, is coming and saying, oh, the settlement sheets are really the one record that is most important to show all of the financial records in this case, and that's incorrect.
Is there anything in the record that shows where they were and why they didn't still exist? Did he keep them on the laptop? Were they hard copies? Or what's the record show on that, on the settlement sheets?
Well, I guess I can back up and explain the record keeping in this case. So,
I just actually want
Wells
that question.
Wyatt, say that again.
I just actually am looking for that question. Is there anything in the record about what happened to the settlement sheets that the bankruptcy court said were missing?
They all would have been on the laptop that Candace Cooley took with her.
Is that in the record?
That's not in the record, is it?
The record is that Candace Cooley took the laptop.
Yes,
I guess your question
is, that the settlement sheets were, why would the settlement sheets be in the record? But aside from why, is it in the record that they were?
I don't believe that the record shows that the settlement checks would have come from the entity known as Timmerman. So Timmerman would have created these settlement sheets, and the settlement sheets then would have been emailed to Candace Cooley. And this isn't in the record.
But is that in the record?
Maybe they would have been sent in the mail. We don't know.
Exactly. And there's nothing in the record that any of the documentation was sent in the mail from Timmerman. The record is that they were emailed. The records for these were emailed. And whether that's a settlement record or that is a the documentation
should have been fairly easy to go get them and, quote, keep them. For purposes of the bankruptcy, but they never show up in the records that are produced.
Because Wells Wyatt didn't produce them.
Right, he didn't produce them, and that seems to be the central problem here, and the one that you completely ignore in your briefing. Because they're the ones that seem to demonstrate, you know, with any degree of accuracy or reliability, what the relationship between these two people was. That's the problem. The problem is go ahead.
No, and I think that that's the point that I make in my briefing, is there's an overemphasis on these settlement sheets. These settlement sheets wouldn't by themselves show the financial condition of this debtor.
Well, they might show something, though, and I just want to ask a yes and no question. So here's the yes and no question. Is there something in the record that reflects that the settlement sheets were on the laptop that the ex-girlfriend took? Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
Back to my
Thanks.
Knowledge.
Thank you. Okay.
So, Your Honors, obviously, as the Court's aware, this case is about documentation, but it's not documentation in the record. And in this case, really, what 11 U.S.C. 727 provides for is that the debtor can't hide behind chaotic records or no records and still receive a discharge. And that's really not what's done in this case. I think it's also important to understand that the documents can be looked at in a vacuum. And to say, well, this one record, we're going to put the entire discharge on one record, which the court is the one that determined would be the important document, not the debtor, not Wells Wyatt. And so I think that the court needs to look at all of the records in this case, not just the settlement sheets. And with that, the debtor didn't only provide borrower grace certificates, the debtor also provided taxes, the debtor provided financial statements, which were provided by his CPA. The debtor provided emails regarding subordination agreements with
I think the bankruptcy court said that the borrowing base certificates really didn't say in any good way what percentage of the various lots Mr. Wyatt owned? And that's why the settlement sheets were important, because they would have. Was the bankruptcy court wrong that the borrowing base certificates didn't accurately describe the percentage of ownership Mr. Wyatt had?
The district court, magistrate court. That made that decision. But yes, I do believe that they're wrong. And if you look at all of the borrower base certificates, they're all generally set up in the same way. It's a fillable form that was filled out, and it lists all of the information in the same way on each of the borrower base certificates, including. And by way of example, I look at excerpt of record 392, and each of these borrower base certificates. Let me get there. Each of these borrower base certificates have the head in the herd, the type of cattle in the herd, the location of that lot, the owner of the feedlot, the lot numbers, whether they're owned or partnered, and when I say partnered with Timmerman, the weight of those cattle, the price, the total, and it specifically has a percentage owner. By way of example, on
392 is something different. Maybe a little bit off.
This would be appellant's excerpt of the record at 392. And so on each of these borrower base certificates, it does specifically list the ownership interest, and it follows through to the net value with appropriate reasoning. So if you look at the very first line on 392, you've got 1588 head of heifers located in Sterling, Colorado. The price of those cattle is on a $500 per head profit estimate, and then it just kind of extrapolates out. The total value of that herd is $794, and then Wells' 50% interest would be $397, and then all the way over on the right hand, it simply tallies those. And to be candid, that's
basically
part of
what it's doing as to the key question of what the division is between Timmerman and him. It basically says 50% all the time.
Exactly. Well, it's
I thought the record indicates that may be true of the profits, but doesn't indicate the equity. Is that an asset determination?
I don't think I understand the question, but the borrower base certificate doesn't state, well, again, on 392, that cow is not worth $500, that the estimated, and all these are estimated, and that's clearly in the record, the estimated profit. Are you with me, Your Honor?
It says percent owned, and then it says 50%, there's various times 100%, or 33%, that's what it says.
Yeah, and so the valuation on this borrower base certificate is based on the estimated profit that cow is going to make.
So that's the
and
problem.
Then,
isn't the problem that we don't have any indication on these borrower base certificates, indication of ownership interest in the cattle?
And that's the ownership interest it's an ownership interest in the profit of the cattle,
but
not
I
of the cattle.
I thought it was also an ownership interest in the stock, and that's what's not on here. And that's necessary
saying?
To understand. I mean, what I'm learning about the cow business now is minimal, but my understanding is that the main objection was this tells you nothing about what his assets were in the stock.
When you say stock, are you referring to cattle, or are you
cattle,
saying stock?
Cattle.
Okay. I disagree with you, Your Honor. It's all rolling stock or non bred stock, which means that these are slaughtered each year, and the estimated profit
isn't.
Exactly, and that's all disclosed, though. So you'll see that there's bred stock and non-bred stock.
Right, so as to the bred stock, which is long-term, there is no indication of the ownership interest, is that right? Therefore, the assets can be calculated.
Incorrect. So on the borrower base listed on the borrower base certificate.
Well, the percentage of profits is not the percent of profits. You're sort of wandering around. You told me that the percentage is the percent of profits. Now you're saying the percentage is the percent of ownership.
That's because it's a different type of cattle. And I very much understand the court's struggle with different types of cattle. There are several different kinds.
And you're saying that on the borrower base certificate, when it says percent owned for the breeding cattle, that means the percentage, not the percentage of the profit, but the percentage of ownership interest.
Correct, and you have to look at the way these are valued. And if you look at the price column on a borrower base certificate, and you and I wouldn't understand this without testimony from somebody that's in the cattle industry. So you look at the first two rows and you've got $500. And then you've got, and that's we think we're going to make $500
with this
animal.
By the way, it's 391. That's why I was having problems. But now I'm looking at 391.
Your Honor, 391 is the borrower base certificate for October of 16. These are set up the same way I was referencing July of 16.
92 is a document that's a completely different document. It says
okay,
are you talking about the page number at the bottom or the ECF number?
I'm talking about on the bottom right-hand side.
Thanks.
Okay. So I'll look at what 391 is, but it's the same. It's the same analysis. So you've got a price, $500 is and this is all in the record and testimony, $500 is what they think the value is going to be for that particular cattle. Then you look at a price per pound of $1.60. Well, obviously.
I understand all that. What I want to know is what the percent owned means.
So if you've got $500 that you're going to make after the slaughter of this animal, well, is why it gets 50%
of that. That's the profit. You're wandering around. That's profit. That is not the percent of ownership in the breeding stock.
Because he never had ownership of the cow.
He didn't.
No, he has an ownership of these cattle.
I thought he was investing money in it. He was doing that. He was getting a percentage of the profit, but he was also investing in the stock.
That's the bread stock.
Right, this is the bread stock.
And again, this is all part of the record. So if you look at the bread stock, that herd is valued differently.
I know.
And his testimony supports this.
And then it says percent owned. And what does that percent owned mean for the bread stock?
50%.
He owns 50%. In other words, he invested 50% and he gets a 50% equity in those stock. That's what it means.
Yeah, and if you look at the valuation, now we're looking at a $1,500 animal. So this animal, it isn't profit or loss. This animal is worth $1,500, and he does own that, and that is his testimony.
So can I sum up what I think you're saying so you can tell me if I'm right or not? So we got two types of stock. We got the rolling stock, and we got the bread stock. The rolling stock is going to get slaughtered, and so it doesn't matter how much he owns of the cow. It matters how much he owns of the profit, the income that's going to be earned from the cow, right so far?
That's a non-breeding rolling stock, yes.
Okay, and so the percentage for the borrowing base certificate for that kind of cow is the percentage of ownership of the income that's going to be earned, which is the relevant point on that. Am I right so far?
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Now I'm going to turn over to the breeding stock. On the breeding stock, what's relevant is how much he owns of the actual asset, not the income, the asset, in other words, the cow. And you're saying that the borrowing base certificate percentage for the bread stock is how much he owns of the cow. Is that right?
Exactly.
I have one more question then, and then the other question is that on the bread stock, does one earn, on the breeding stock, does one earn income from that? I mean, do you rent out the cow for, I don't know how it works.
No. So it's in the beautiful West, it's a large herd of cattle.
Yeah.
And that herd gets larger and larger and larger. His percentage of ownership of that cattle stays the same.
So what you're saying is one would not know that from looking at this piece of paper because it says percent owned. It doesn't distinguish between the breeding stock and the rolling stock, so it doesn't say that some of these numbers mean percent of profit and others mean percentage of assets.
record was, we're going to slaughter all these animals at the end of the year. And there's going to be a master accounting of, we slaughtered this animal, the estimate was $500, we got $300. And that should be in the record on each year. And my response to that is, that would be nice, but that was never required by Banner in a decade-long relationship with Wells Wyatt. And therefore, the borrower-based certificates, as explained, every single month, those borrower-based certificates explains to the court the value of Wells Wyatt's assets in this case.
Okay. All right, your time's up, and we'll give you a minute without a very complicated thank you. Sir?
Thank you, judges. I'll jump right into it. It's important to consider the standard review here. We're talking about clear error. And as to the settlement sheets, as to this particular point, the bankruptcy court's decision.
Clear error as to the underlying facts, right? One sort of generic question is, let's suppose that the borrowing-based documents were accepted by the bank all these years. I mean, there is a sort of bait-and-switch problem here, which is the bank accepted all of this as sufficient, and now that this is a bankruptcy, they're saying they're insufficient. And the question is, if, let's say, these borrowing-based certificates, you know, aren't so hot, and maybe even they're not even accurate, but they are records, and they were kept, and they were what was relied on by the parties here, and why is there an obligation to do more than that?
Well, Your Honor,
I mean, you can now attack the accuracy of them for purposes of litigating what the actual assets were, but that's different from not having records.
Well, we can, in terms of relying on the borrowing bases and extending credit, at that point, we don't know what we don't know. We're giving borrowing-based certificates, and there's some backup data.
Just a timeout. It's the same $2 million that you loaned, right? So the
yes.
Point is that if these borrowing-based certificates, which the bank prescribed the format of and accepted, were good enough for you to loan the $2 million and keep this credit going for a fairly extended period of time, the bank's really the only real party at issue here. Why aren't they good enough when it comes to kind of unwinding the business through the bankruptcy? You were good enough for you when you were loaning the money. Why aren't they good enough for you when you're collecting the money?
Well, I mean, the problem is that we don't know what we don't know. I mean, if they are performing,
but that would have been true when you were. That would have been true when you were getting them too. Did anybody ever look at these things at the bank or go back to Mr. Wyatt and say, hey, these things aren't good enough?
No, I think what they were looking at is saying, look, this guy has a huge asset base. He's in formula under the loan. What's the problem?
So that's a question of the accuracy of these documents. The document, the borrowing-based document, has a percent ownership number, right? You're now saying,
yes.
Well, it wasn't true because he really didn't. He mixed up percentage of profit and percentage of assets, and it was not an accurate number, but it's a number. It's on there as to what percentage he owned. So why isn't this a problem for litigating what was underlying these records rather than saying you don't have records?
What we're saying is the records we have, I mean, the 727A3, Congress says you have to keep adequate records that would allow a creditor to have a snapshot into the person's finances. When we look at these borrowing-based certificates, they sort of crumble upon examination. I would like to direct the court's attention to 3SER 395 through 396. It's an amazing exchange between Judge Meyer and Wells Wyatt. Wells Wyatt is explaining the double financed. He's got an equity piece in the cow and then a profit base in the cow. And Judge Meyer literally says, Mr. Wyatt, where in this document is that arrangement reflected? And he says, it's not.
What's that page?
The other
again?
Thing I would note.
What was that page again?
What?
I'm sorry. You said the page pretty quickly. What was it?
Yes. 3SER 395 through 396. It's,
thank you.
Where he says, literally, the arrangement on the non-breeding stock is not reflected in any of the borrowing bases. I'd also note,
non-breeding stock isn't reflected, but there are percentages there. He's telling us the percentages are the percentage of profit, so what's wrong with that?
Well, right, but when you look at the borrowing base, the issue why why Wells White says it's not there is because it says percent owned. And everyone on this call
says it's owned. So it's in that sense not accurate, but he's now standing up and saying, well, actually for those it doesn't mean percent ownership and it's profit. That's not keeping records. I mean, they're not as clear as they could be, but he's now explaining them and saying that there were that it meant X in this instance and Y in that instance. So that's very easy to plug in. So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is that the 72783 requires the debtor keep and preserve accurate records. These records are not accurate. For him to come back and say, well, by the way, this is what I actually meant, doesn't work. The other thing I would notice, if this court goes to R285, this underscores
But they're accurate if you have this clause on them. I mean, or if they're not accurate, then it's because he's keeping poor, his records are wrong and you can litigate them. But he's now told you what it means, i.e., when it's a breeding stock, it means assets, and when it's not a breeding stock, it means profits. So that's easy now to deal with on these documents. Now you're saying, but they're not accurate. It isn't really true that he owned 50% of the breeding stock. Go ahead.
Let me expound. The accuracy is not just limited to the relationship with a non-breeding stock. If you go to 4SER95 and 3SER275 through 285, that talks about what's called the Squaw Valley deal. The Squaw Valley deal was a huge loss for Wells Wyatt. Yet if you look at all the borrowing bases in 2016 and 2017, those are all listed as a profit. So effectively what he's saying is this borrowing base is not just inaccurate because it doesn't reflect the profit loss on the non-breeding stock. It also doesn't reflect the Squaw Valley loss. The other thing I'd note is if the court looks at R285 and looks in the left-hand corner, it's going to see ewes. Ewes are sheep. Wyatt Livestock doesn't own any sheep. And so literally, if you look at the borrowing base, it's not just one inaccuracy, it's a mountain of inaccuracies, because the ewes are not part of Banner Bank's borrowing base. They're not owned by Wyatt Livestock. And so we have a collateral base that doesn't even include our collateral. So if we are looking as a creditor, to records that are trying to justify what a creditor would, want to see, this just doesn't cut it. The other thing I want to point out.
The creditor did see all this and didn't worry about it, whether we're lending the money.
I mean, that's exactly right. But, obviously, if Banner Bank knew the situation in 2016 and 2017, the situation would be quite different. Banner Bank relied on their borrowing bases. To the degree they did, could have done more. They did, but that doesn't mean they didn't do enough. And it doesn't alleviate debtors' obligation as imparted by Congress to keep adequate records to justify his time of the bankruptcy and at a reasonable time in the past. And as the bankruptcy court noted, as to the settlement sheet specifically, which I would note, Mr. Guile is not correct. Candace Cooley and Wells Wyatt testify over and over regarding the importance of those documents and what goes into them. I direct the court's attention to 2SER86, 2SER92, where Candace Cooley says they have, quote, anything you can imagine, 4SER525 through 528, 4SER532 through 533, 4SER633. The record is littered with statements as to what goes into these settlement sheets. The other point I want to make is, it's not just limited to the lack of settlement sheets. Another point that animated the court's decision why it's not clear error is...
Wait, just a minute. Was I just covering this case?
I believe so.
All right. Did the bank ask for the settlement sheets?
I believe so.
And what happened?
According to Judge Meyer, there was no settlement sheets for 2016 and 2017, which is the critical period of time.
I mean, they were asked for but not produced.
Exactly. To my knowledge, they're not in the record. records, and I think the line that the court said was...
But quality, meaning what does it purport to show? This purported to show what his ownership interest is. You're just saying it was wrong.
Yeah.
But not that it didn't purport to show his ownership interest. It's right on there.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, I mean, if we look at 285, the asset base is $3.5 million. All we're asking is where did it go? Because 2 months later, Wyatt Livestock, Wyatt declares bankruptcy and lists his interest in Wyatt Livestock as zero.
But the question is, why isn't this being litigated on the merits against him because he hasn't demonstrated where it went, rather than with regard to whether he gets a discharge or bankruptcy at all?
Well, because that's what 72783 is.
Well, I understand that, but ordinarily when you're trying to figure out what his assets are, you have a trial, you figure out what his assets are, and if he can't demonstrate what his assets are, then the judge can make a determination against him that he didn't have these assets and he was lying about them. But not lying about them, but why is that a question of not getting a discharge as opposed to a merits determination as to what is available for the creditor?
Your Honor, there was a state court litigation with the Timmermans. So it's not as though the Better Bank just sat in bankruptcy and just said, this is where I'm going to exert all my rights. There was a state court matter that was litigated with the Timmermans. I don't know if it was contemporaneous. I think it was contemporaneous. But
that's another question. Why couldn't you subpoena the Timmermans and get these documents?
Well, I don't think that's my obligation. It's the debtor's obligation to do it. If the debtor wants to keep adequate records, he has to send a subpoena to the Timmermans and say, hey, I don't have any records. The records I do have all have Banner Bank's Bates numbers on them, which means that I don't have adequate records. Can you give me the documents for 2016 and 2017? They didn't do that. They're not in the record.
Counsel, what's our standard of review here?
It's clear error for the findings of fact and de novo review for the identification and application of the law. And one thing I do want to note, and this sort of cuts both ways, is the bankruptcy court was not just animated by the settlement sheets. It really said, hey, you know, under questioning, I asked Wells Wyatt or Mr. Peterman asked Wells Wyatt, where are these cows? You had a $3.5 million asset base in August of 2017. What happened to that? And he said the cows are being cows, which suggests that they're out there somewhere. But, you know, Wyatt was sort of, I guess, completely indifferent to that. So the court looked through the record and tried to find something that could say what's the disposition of the breeding stock, the non-breeding stock. Judge Meyer couldn't find anything. The one thing I did find was at 367 of the record. It's sort of buried in an exhibit. It purports to state the value of the breeding stock. However, it's not a settlement sheet. It's not a profit and loss statement. There's no talk about the gross figure. There's no talk about the weight. Further, Wyatt didn't argue this document below. I would just note that you could even assume this document is a complete and accurate appraisal of the breeding stock. It doesn't take away from the fact that we don't know what happened to the non-breeding stock. Again, this person's asset base went from $13.5 million to zero. All we want to know is where are the records that trace these transactions? Where are the cows? What's their disposition? And we don't have that. Now, the 2 points I do want to make as to the justification for not keeping adequate records, because this is a two-part analysis, is although the court didn't go through all the Cox factors, the court specifically addressed the factors that Mr. Guile raised, which is a purported lack of sophistication. However, the bankruptcy court specifically touched on Wells Wyatt's lack of sophistication on page 21 and said he wasn't educated. The court also went through what a reasonable rancher would do in those circumstances. And again, I do want to emphasize that regardless of Wyatt's sophistication, all we're asking is where are these records?
But it really doesn't have to do with sophistication. These documents existed. They weren't produced. And it seems to me that has to be the focus. I mean, these records were not kept by him, but they were kept, and so he didn't have to redo it himself a second time. They existed. And so certainly his excuse
2017 timeframe. He can't blame a laptop at that point. All he needs to do is keep records, and we just don't have them.
Well, let's keep the records that exist. It was a fair inference that he had these either as an email or as a piece of paper at some point.
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you very much. Your time is up.
Thank you, judges.
Yes, you have one minute.
Most importantly, the question is, where did it all go? And I think that that's center to the court's analysis here.
Where? What?
The debtor,
the cows or the
people? Where did it all... Where Ms. McLaughlin said, well, the arguments, well, you had all these cattle, where did they all go? And explain that to me. And Wells Wyatt prevailed on the 11 U.S.C. 727A5 action. That, how can this court say, you successfully explained all of the loss of all of these cattle and where they are, but your records don't really help us with that? And I think the court needs to analyze those two rulings together to show that on the de novo review, I don't think this court applied the appropriate law to the facts, and I think that that ruling by itself really strengthens that. I think you also look at the other rulings in this case, 1127 under 727A2, 1127A4, and 1127A5, the debtor prevailed. The debtor also prevailed on the 523 actions, which are fraud specific to a creditor, as to three of the four loans in this
case. What was the basis for finding that he did?
So the basis was Wells Wyatt explained to the court what happened to these cattle and why there was a loss. The loss was the substantial decrease in the cattle market in the second half of 2016. The debtor testified that he thought he was going to receive a $700,000 profit. That information is on the BBCs from 2016 and instead had a $50,000 loss. So the court relied on that in addition to the reliance on where all of the equipment was in this case and the real property in ruling that the debtor explained satisfactorily any loss of assets or deficiency of assets to meet the debtor's liabilities. So in my briefing, I go into the what should be a good faith element.
Is true that in discovery there was a request for settlement statements?
I'm sure I do not recall a specific request for settlement statements. I would assume that in discovery there was a request for all documents related to the cattle, and all of those documents were produced, and there was no motion.
They weren't produced because we know these settlement statements existed, and they weren't produced.
I'll correct it. All of the records that Wells Wyatt had were produced to Banner Bank through discovery, and there was no motions to compel. There was no discovery litigation in this case because Wells provided all that information.